In a world where uncertainty reigns supreme, where shadows of chaos dance at every turn, one truth emerges unyielding. Preparation is not a luxury, but a lifeline. Behold the Wellness Company, a beacon of readiness amidst the tempestuous seas of fate. Envision a sanctuary of tranquility, where the tumult of unforeseen medical crises finds no purchase. The Wellness Company's Medical Emergency Kit stands as a bastion of assurance, a fortress of resilience against the unseen foes of health. Within its sacred confines lie the tools of salvation. Ivermectin, to ward off the insidious whispers of disease. Emergency antibiotics, to quell the raging storms of infection. Antivirals, to vanquish the relentless tides of contagion, and more. The Wellness Company Medical Emergency Kit is not merely a collection of supplies, it is the embodiment of preparedness itself. Crafted by the hands of esteemed healers led by luminaries such as Dr. Peter McCullough, Dr. James Thorpe, Dr. Harvey Risch, and Dr. Drew Pinsky, this kit stands as the pinnacle of safety, the zenith of prevention. These truth-seeking doctors have forged a testament to vigilance, a testament to the unwavering pursuit of well-being. Embrace the certainty that comes from being armed against adversity. Embrace the Wellness Company, for in its embrace lies the promise of resilience, the promise of a brighter tomorrow amidst the chaos of today. Don't wait for the next crisis to strike. Visit twc.health/strangeplanet and use promo code STRANGEPLANET for an exclusive 10% discount. Prepare today and rest easy tomorrow.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Richard Serrett's Strange Planet. Following the truth wherever it leads. Exposing evil and corruption and the secret machinations of powerful elites. Revealing the high strangeness beneath the surface of our supposed reality. Coming to you from the Great White North and his studio beneath the stairs. Here's Richard.
Hey, welcome to another episode of Strange Planet. Thanks, as always, for sticking me in your ear. And if you'd like to get deeper into Strange Planet, please consider becoming a premium subscriber. It's real easy. Just click on the link in the episode description. StrangePlanet.supportingcast.fm, StrangePlanet.supportingcast.fm. There are three monthly tiers or programs to choose from. Choose the one that's right for you. Basically, you gain access to commercial-free listening. You receive bonus episodes. You get a subscription to my monthly newsletter, Inner Sanctum, discounts on Strange Planet merchandise, and much more. StrangePlanet.supportingcast.fm. Just click on the link. What if much or even most of what we think we know about U.S. history or North American history, certainly pre-Columbus history, is wrong? I think many of us suspect that, and we've dedicated a number of programs to that very notion on this podcast over the years. But what if we could utilize AI, artificial intelligence, to help investigate some of these historical mysteries? Well, that is, in fact, the subject of a new book that's in the works right now. And the two principals involved in this project are with me. David Edward has been with us several times. He served as a special agent in the U.S. Army in the 1980s and 90s and is a veteran of multiple overseas combat tours. He was the special agent in charge of the 1990 Panama Canal Counterterrorism Threat Assessment Report to the U.S. Congress. He's a United States Army Intel School graduate, where he studied advanced human intelligence and battlefield counterintelligence, also completing training at the Jungle Operations Training Center in Panama, Central America. He holds advanced degrees in engineering, including a doctorate in engineering, three related Master of Science degrees, an undergraduate degree in business. He's currently the director at the Institute for Advanced Christian Research and is the author of over 50 books. His best-selling thriller, Panama Red, has sold over 250,000 copies and is based on true events, chronicling U.S. military activities during Noriega's 1980s dictatorship and exposes the early stages of the child trafficking crisis we face today. David Edward, welcome. How are you, buddy?
I'm good, Richard. When you read that, it just reminds me how old I am.
I need a whole show to list your accolades. John Levy with a blend that's part rich coffee beans, part fiery passion, and part entrepreneurial grind. I love the coffee metaphors. John Levy has brewed success for over two decades in the coffee business, but John's flavor palette extends beyond just coffee. He's chosen the adventurous path of setting up home on a vast 20-acre plot near Utah's mysterious Skinwalker Ranch, proving his mettle and penchant for unique off-grid experiences. In contrast, digitally, he's a force to be reckoned with. Through his At John Levy Channel YouTube channel, John delves into the overlooked and mysterious corners of history. With a dedicated audience of nearly 300,000 subscribers, John's continually shaking up perceptions and helping us separate fact from fiction. His meticulous research doesn't just challenge the status quo, it filters out the myths, leaving behind the rich aroma of historical truth. John Levy, welcome to Strange Planet. How are you?
Oh, good. Thanks, Richard. Thanks for having us.
All right. So let's get just kind of an overview here of how artificial intelligence could be used to investigate, let's call them, historical anomalies.
Yeah, I'm going to let John introduce it, but just to kick it off, I'll give just a quick background. John has been researching this stuff for 5 years, a very long time. He's compiled hundreds of hours of video evidence and research, and he and I connected, and I started pulling some of that research and plugging it into the different AI algorithms and stuff. Because one of the things, I mean, I'm pretty into AI at this point. I'm programmatically into it, and it started spitting back all kinds of cool things that we'll talk about. But John, do you want to kind of lay the foundation?
Yeah, I think that was a good kind of introduction to it. What I've been doing is just looking into history and simply what history tells us about everything, every aspect of our country and how the buildings were built. And I started to find anomalies and a kind of repeated theme. A lot of buildings were built in the 1800s in 1 year. And when you look at these buildings, you realize we couldn't build that today, you know, let alone in the 1800s in 1 year, with horse and buggy, pre-power tools. And it just opened up a can of worms and sent me down a rabbit hole for over 5 years now, where history doesn't seem to make sense. And so I just plug away week, John, after week. Yes.
Sorry, I wonder if you could give me an example, because that is so, what you were just describing there about these buildings, these magnificent edifices, you know, prior to the brutalist architecture's school of architecture was just a blight on humanity. I think there's an example. There was a beautiful federal building in Chicago, and the dome is actually bigger than the U.S. Capitol building, and it was built fairly quickly. And then, like within a couple decades, they tore it down inexplicably. Is that the kind of thing you're talking about?
That's exactly the kind of thing, and it's one after another. And everybody has one of these buildings that they remember from their past, a beautiful over-the-top building that gave you a feeling that the cathedrals give you. I mean, they're so massive with their marble and their steps and their Corinthian columns. resembling European architecture in many cases. And then when they get torn down, it breaks our hearts. And everybody has an example of that. Everybody's seen that. And that's what I do week after week. We look at different examples, and it's very heartbreaking when they tore them down, but many of them still exist, including our very capital. I mean, our capital wasn't built in 1 year necessarily, but the nation's capital was built in 1793 to 1800. So that's 7 years. In 1793, I mean, we have to think about the means available. Well, that's what David has done, is he's actually getting the information of what it would take. Things that we couldn't really completely calculate and have the AI make sense of it. And it was my suspicion that this would all be impossible. You know, even as a builder myself, viewers of the channel leaving comments and emails, they're in the building industry. It's logistically impossible in these time frames. Perhaps in the time that we're living even now, Notre Dame, the cathedral in Paris, it's going to take 20 years just to rebuild the roof. And yet we have examples of cathedrals that have been built in 1 year with the same intricacy as the European cathedrals.
So this is where the artificial intelligence or the algorithms come in. You're doing what, David, making calculations or using AI to make calculations for you to determine what some of these grandiose edifices would have required in terms of manpower and materials and hours?
Yeah. So what we're doing, there's this guy named Morton J. Adler, who is was a philosopher and an educator from the 1940s. He created the world's list of great books or something like that. And then he indexed it. And he created something called the Syntopicon. And when he did that, he created a methodology called syntopical analysis. So this is basically looking broadly, and he outlines it, and there's different layers to it, but it's looking broadly across documents, assets, maps, literature, books, all of that, identifying themes, translating those themes into ideas, and then indexing those ideas against each other. So you can see where Plato and Kant and Aristotle and Thomas Jefferson, say, are all talking to each other and having that conversation. So we took that framework basically as a matrix, and then we're dumping in these stories, and let's call them narratives, because that's what we call them. So for example, one of the buildings we're starting with is Fort Point in San Francisco, which is a star fort that was built before the Civil War. And we're starting to say, okay, let's look at the narrative of that construction, and let's compare that narrative to other buildings that we get in that same time period. And we hand all those into the AI and then ask it questions. So one of the questions I ask is, based on all of these definitions, is there a template, or is there some structure to the history? And I mean, yeah. And what came back was, it actually produced, which we're putting in the book, it produced the template, the narrative template that all of these histories are based upon. And it's like a formula, like when you're a little kid and you got the old purple steno and you had to, do your work on it, or you do the Mad Libs, right, where it's already written and you put the words in. So it's the same kind of thing, that, you know, the timing, the architect, the materials, all of that stuff, turns out, is a template pattern that is stamped all over North America. Now, we started with North America because it's the simplest history to unravel. If we were to try and go to the Parthenon in Greece and claim that that was built, you know, whatever. It's just there's so many layers to that.
Right. On top of civilization, North American's history is only several hundred years old. So it's pretty clean, pretty simple.
It's cleaner. Cleaner. And we also, and we started looking at the West Coast because that's even cleaner. And we forget, you know, we romanticize so many things, but John, the house he's sitting in, he built himself. And I owned a construction company for like 6 years. I was just telling him I dug more footers than I think anyone on the planet over that period. So you got to have that practical experience to understand what construction really is, because a lot of us, we're sitting in our chair in our air conditioning, drinking our Diet Coke like I am right now. And we think, oh, yeah, 200 people in, 650 brick for 11 years, piece of cake. They can do that. It's like, try it. Try it for 3 days, you know, that kind of thing. So the AI identified that, and it also identified patterns that I wouldn't have picked up on. Like San Francisco, for example, it turns out in the historical narrative of many of the buildings built in the 1850s, early 1850s, so 1853 to 1856, part of these buildings, and there's more than 50 of them, part of their narrative is that the granite was imported from China.
Okay. Yeah.
For a couple of things, why is that important? Why, of all the things you're going to tell us in the two paragraphs about the building, why is that one that keeps repeating itself everywhere? And then what we did, and we used the AI, and we said, okay, let's look at the volume of the buildings, the timings, the sourcing. Let's look at what we know about the Pacific trade routes, about the materials, and the logistics of bartering with China to get the granite. I think, and John, if you remember, it was something like just in this one Fort Point, it's something like 27 million cubic pounds of pounds, 27 million pounds of granite, which is over 13 tons of granite, was supposedly sourced from China in a year to lay the foundation for Fort Point. Well, okay. Then we went back and we said, okay, well, what ships would they have put it on? And there's this thing called barks that are three-mast ships, which would have been the standard cargo transport. Well, how much can they carry? About 500 tons. Okay, but they don't load them to capacity. And we do all that math. And it's like, okay, so it would have taken 35 ships loaded 80% with granite to get the foundation for Fort Point, who is competing with 49 other buildings for granite. And that kind of stuff is what we're unraveling. And what happens is, John has identified the contradiction, right, or the weirdness, and what we're finding is that it doesn't even survive the simplest scrutiny, and it all falls apart. And we're actually being able to trace deep into why it falls apart, and that's part of what we're showing in North America, anyway.
So, let's continue on with some other examples, because this is fascinating. I mentioned that Chicago Federal Building. Chicago had a World's Fair. I think you may have talked about this on your YouTube channel, John. Chicago had a World's Fair, and they had all of these amazing buildings that they put up, what, over the course of 2 years?
Yeah, and even less. Yeah, a little less than 2 years. They built over 100 buildings. And they're beautiful. I mean, they're beautiful. And we are told that they're temporary. And so that's a great example. I mean, building it, or, you know, are you really building 100 buildings in this time period? You know, nowadays we might use tents, or we could imagine tents, you know, for a carnival or a circus, or, I mean, that was essentially what this event was all about. I mean, do we do that today? Would we build an entire city with a lakefront, with fountains? How can those things even be temporary, really? I mean, you have stone up against a lake, you know, up against a building. And in my opinion, anyone who looks at those pictures should understand that you can't erect, you know, 100-foot buildings, for example, that are temporary. And the Federal Building is a beautiful example. I absolutely love that building. And it just makes no sense in this time period. All these buildings, Penn Station is a great example. Penn Station, how the community was outraged when they tore it down. It doesn't really make sense. It begs to ask the questions, you know. I mean, why are in this early time period when resources should be so valuable, and it should be more difficult than today to build these structures, why are we just tearing them down?
Right.
Even in San Francisco, you know, they had a great fire, we're told. Mm-hmm. But they also, after the fire, they just started demolishing buildings. And even during the fire, they tell us during the fire, they were demolishing with dynamite buildings preemptively so that the fire wouldn't spread. So it just, it seems unusual to have such ease of building in short time periods, demolishing and then building again. And that's how our history looks. It's almost like they had the magical wand and money was no object and labor was no object and materials were no object.
Right. Well, granted, labor costs were pretty inexpensive back then, but that doesn't account for, you know,
not having cranes. And
exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and you have to have the people too. But John, I haven't even talked about this. Last night, what I was doing is I was going through the Chicago World's Fair, Richard, that you mentioned, and also through the San Francisco World's Fair. And one of the nice things that AI can do is that you can load up an image and it can identify cloning, and meaning where little pieces of the image are reused, usually to hide stuff. It can also look at the way the file is compressed, and it can identify layers. So if a photo is faked, you know, if you copy and paste a crowd of people in front of a building, it can identify the different the JPEG compression levels, and you can see the pieces. And I was actually doing that with the Chicago World's Fair last night. And what's interesting is I forget, it wasn't the Philadelphia Library. One of the libraries had a repository of pictures. I was going through them. Every picture that shows the big central water canal with that big gold statue in it.
Yes.
Every single one of those comes up as manipulated. And it's usually the gold statue. And the other thing, on almost every picture of San Francisco in the 1800s, or of the San Francisco World Fair, or of the Chicago World's Fair, and those are the ones I've done so far, almost every one of those pictures, the tops of the buildings, the flagpoles, are all digitally manipulated for some reason.
What are your source images from the Chicago Tribune, or what, if it was around in 1893?
Or no, they have is a lot of libraries, especially local libraries, like San Francisco has I'm going to get the name. It's like the something San Francisco Historic Library of San Francisco.
Yeah, you know, the digital archives. And that's another thing, is it's actually very difficult to obtain a lot of these photos. When we really want to get serious, we have to go to all these obscure little places and little separate libraries that hold these digital collections. And so I never heard about the World's Fair, really. I never learned anything about that in school. And it's really interesting. All of this architecture and history is really, really interesting. It's some of the most interesting history that I found. And yet it's stuff that I never learned about. And people are actually very interested to learn about it.
So what is the point then of, I'll tell you what, we'll take a time out, we'll come back, and we'll get into, you know, why these images are being manipulated, why the AI algorithms, it doesn't add up, you know, in terms of the material and how these amazing structures could have been built in such a short amount of time. What is this all leading us to? Back with more of my conversation with John Levy and David Edward right here on Strange Planet. Don't go away.
It's time to redefine reality. This is Richard Serrett's Strange Planet.
We are back with David Edward and John Levy, and they're working on a new book examining or investigating historical mysteries using artificial intelligence. And the new book is Evidence of the Old World. Is that the working title?
Yes, that is the working title.
Okay. And you sort of described it as what? Fingerprints of the Gods, maybe with the lens turned to modern day, or let's say 19th, 20th century America?
Yeah. And that was just for you. I'm not claiming that I am a writer of that caliber, but that's generally the idea is, we're basically looking at history, and it's a very methodical and detective-like approach. I'm trying to learn everything. You know, when you read my intro, it is true that I was trained by the United States Army on how to investigate counterintelligence matters. I keep FM-60, the field manual for investigations, on my desk. So we're very much treating this like a legitimate detective investigation, and we're looking for what you just asked, Richard. It's the right question. What did they have the means? Did they have the opportunity? And then what on earth could the motive have been? And that's what we're trying to chronicle. They clearly had the means. John has found, has discovered it. He's reverse engineered. They did it. They had the means to alter history. Now, what we have to develop, did they alter the narrative, the story of these buildings, or is there more to the construction of the buildings? We've got to develop that. We have our own ideas. But they had the opportunity, and John, one of the things you point out in one of your videos, if you go look at what all the companies were popping up in all of these towns, they're all publishing companies and photo companies. It's like the weirdest industry that shows up early. In these towns.
Auction companies, auctioneers of land and real estate at this very early time period.
Yeah.
You know, I think what we're doing is nothing that anyone who's interested in ancient history wouldn't do with the pyramids or with, the ruins of Yonaguni underwater or just any of these really clearly old structures. What we're doing is bringing the timeline back and back and asking those same questions. Is it possible? I think everyone can agree that the mainstream idea of the pyramids and how they built them is pretty ridiculous. As far as the things, you know, that have been taught in school. But it's the same thing when you look at all these buildings from the 1800s. They really are at a place overly sized and unnecessary, you know, hence why they tear them down. Because they're, you know, oftentimes in history, they tell us that they were too drafty and they, you know, were too big and the doors were too big and they were hard to maintain. So they tear them down. And it doesn't make sense why any people would attempt to you know, build something that big.
Another classic example would be the Singer Tower in New York City, which I think for about a year was the tallest building in the world. Was it 60 floors? It's just pencil thin building. I don't know how long it took to build, but they suddenly decided to tear it down in the 60s, and their excuse was, well, there's not enough office space or something like that.
Yeah. So that's a perfect example. And
Richard, you wanted some specific examples. Yeah. Here's another one. And this one came out, was discovered in 2012, but no one did anything with it. You know, the lost colony of Roanoke
off North Carolina.
In North Carolina.
Yeah.
And famously John White left, came back 3 years later, and then, they're all gone, and his, daughter and his granddaughter were missing, and they searched for him, and he made a map when he was looking. And this became relevant because this is 1857, which ties back to the history of San Francisco that we can get to. We were just looking for maps and stuff. And in 2012, they scanned the map because there's a patch on it, kind of up a river, where at a fork in the river. And underneath the patch was a star fort. Well, what's a star fort doing on? I mean, this is the lost colony of Roanoke. These are people in the most inhospitable, you know, country in the world, and they all die.
Yeah, I think you said 1857. It's 1587.
I have that, my little dyslexia, which of course makes all this. Yeah, 1587. Sorry,
that's okay.
Good. Thank you. Correcting me.
What is a star fort?
That is exactly the question that we ask. It's like, first off, what is it? And then secondly, why would they hide it? Well, a star fort. Well, actually, John, you're much better explaining this than I am. Do you want to give the high level overview of a star fort?
That's a great segue into star fort. Everybody's seen a star fort, but probably not realized they were looking at one. The Statue of Liberty is sitting on a star fort. The pedestal, the massive, oversized star-shaped pedestal, which is essentially a building, which is a fort, is a star fort. And they've just stuck the statue, and actually everything under the statue is very impressive. It fits the same bill of what we're talking about. There's no reason that this massive fortification should be built out on an island in such an early time period. Now you have three other forts, star-shaped forts, right around the Statue of Liberty on Governor's Island. And once somebody points out these star-shaped fortresses to you in America, it changes everything, because that is certainly something that we were never really taught about or had any explanation to how those could have been built. In Florida, you have a Fort Jefferson. I forget the year of Fort Jefferson, very, very early time period, 17 million bricks on an island, and it has a star shape. And what we find is these American star fortifications that are beyond anything. They are some of the most massive of buildings. I mean, forget about the ones that we're talking about, you know, in New York City and things like that, in Chicago. I mean, these things are coastal fortifications, and it absolutely makes no sense. So what we've found, and there's thousands of these forts all over the world. I mean, thousands, and there's websites now, and it's kind of something that developed within my research and within the community that does this kind of research. There's a group of people now doing this research, and we all come together. We all share, and there are so many of these similarities that it begs to ask, could this be something grander than just national? You know, if we find these same star-shaped geometric beauty and precision with these star fortifications. David, weren't you telling me 14 feet thick walls?
Yeah, I mean, I've been to the Fort Morgan in Florida because I was curious. These things, so here's the story. So here's the story on star forts. So the story is people figured out that cannons were bad. So they figured out if they built walls that they could be below, the cannonballs might not hit them. So they started building, and that's the theory. And then in the U.S. after the War of 1812, which we maintain our sovereignty, but we kind of got our butts kicked a little bit, we realized that our coastal fortifications weren't that good. So through a long story, they came up with this thing called the Third System. So this is going to be the third system of fortifications, and it is what became all of these star forts. Is maybe 25 of them.
In America, though, the third fort is just
in America. In America.
Otherwise,
sorry.
In the rest of the world, they're called bastion forts typically.
Right. Thank you. Yeah. Yeah. So they link, but they're built with this. So it's the most difficult building you could ever imagine to build. It uses this masonry technique called Flemish bonding, which is just this wildly complicated structure. The walls are 7 to 14 feet thick, and they're supposed to be these amazing military strategic positions. What we found is that every single star fort fell almost immediately when it was attacked during the Civil War. None of them held. They were all built using 200 something. This is part of that pattern, right? So in San Francisco, Fort Point, which is a star fort, we're told was built with 200 converted gold miners. Fort Morgan in Florida, that I went to and visited, we're told was built with 200 leased slaves. So, and we've done all this reverse engineering. For Fort Morgan, we're told uses 30 million cubic yards of masonry brick. Not 30 million brick, but 30 million yards of brick. So the question is, okay, 200 leased slaves over 6 years in this island in Mobile Bay, Alabama. How would they build it? And you go look at it, and we have pictures of all this, but it's like a Roman bath. It's just the most beautiful building you could imagine. And it makes no sense. The narrative makes no sense. And everywhere we look at star forts, everything I just told you about the third system is accurate, and everyone failed. They're all over-engineered and absolute complete military failures. And the materials are nearly impossible to have acquired. And the labor force that built them is an unskilled labor force that somehow managed to produce the best masonry in the world.
So in other words, they weren't, if I'm reading you correctly or hearing you correctly, these fortifications weren't actually built as forts. They had some other purpose. Because they're militarily... Well, you say they were a failure.
I jumped in.
There's something else, but it also points to a global civilization. that Absolutely. Built these well, all over the world.
You're a smart man, and you're jumping to the back of the book. I think that's where this leads. But we truly are being methodical. So we started with the simplest thing we could think of, which is, where did the name for San Francisco come from? And even that completely falls apart in the narrative. But pretty soon you wind up with Star Forts, and then pretty soon you wind up with this masonry technique, this Flemish bond, and then pretty soon you look at all of the other buildings that were built in this same style at the same time, which of course would have competed for the same resources and laborers. And I think the conclusion is going to be something like where you just ended up, which is, it sure does seem to point to exactly the same stuff we see being built all over the world. Some of that architecture is revered. And we're told the stuff here in the US was disposable, or, you know, it was built for the war, but then they didn't use it, or it fell, or, you know, all that stuff. So that is the picture that is coming out of all of this work. Absolutely.
And so tearing down the Singer Tower, destroying that Chicago Federal Building, these temporary structures at the Chicago World Fair in 1893, which I think was to commemorate the 400th anniversary of Columbus discovering America, they were done away with, what, to bury the tracks, to throw us off the trail that these
that's what we're trying to figure out.
Potentially, that's one option, or just for someone to sell real estates, for example, a lot of these weren't needed. They weren't needed then, really. And we see a pattern of repurposement. So all these buildings in this time period for 100 years up until present day are going to get shuffled around when you start looking at the history. So this building is going to be a courthouse, and then it's going to get converted to maybe a high school and maybe a church. And they don't make sense. Sometimes they look like castles, overly built and eventually torn down, because really it's not exactly what somebody wants.
Let me give an example. That Star Fort that we said we found on the 1587, I'll say it right this time, John White map. The University of North Carolina got interested in that site in 2007. They wound up scanning the map in 2012, because that's how academia works. By 2009, they had flash produced a golf course on that spot and completely destroyed it before
that
Star Fort was discovered.
Great point for bringing that up. Yeah. So a golf course is more important than a historic site. Especially with the masonry, the Flemish technique, and so somebody thought so. Somebody thought golfing was more important, and golf courses are a repeated theme. In fact, we see that over and over.
In order to obliterate the Star Fort to erase it.
It's a frustrating. It is, you know, we're developing. We'll propose our thoughts on what the motive might be, but yeah, we're still just identifying this, and the scope of this is ridiculous, and it's scary, because like I said, with this particular example in North Carolina, they got in front of the researchers by like a year and a half and commissioned a golf course. I mean, think of it. It's one of the first East Coast maps. The Roanoke mystery is one of the biggest mysteries we have in the country. All we do is talk about it. It's even taught in schools. And then they discover this magic patch that for 300 years, no one bothered to look at, by the way. Okay, I guess I'll buy that. Then as soon as it becomes mainstream, just, you know, a year ahead of time, they blew the place up and it's gone. And we see that pattern everywhere. We see it in San Francisco. We see it everywhere we look. And one of the challenges that John and I are having as we write this book is there's too much information. We can't, if we just show everything, you just get overwhelmed. There was a video he did within the past, I don't know, year or two, where he had a book and he was going over the one-year wonders, and you must have done like 30 or 40 of them, John. And they're all like, one year, built in 1 year, destroyed 17 years later, you know, destroyed five years later. It's just the volume of it is insane.
We'll take another time out. David Edward and John Levy, stay with us. We're talking about historical mysteries and how these investigations are being conducted using artificial intelligence. This will be the subject of a brand new book called Evidence of the Old World, perhaps Volume 1. We'll come back in a moment.
Welcome back. Welcome back to Richard Serrett's Strange Planet.
We're back with David Edward and John Levy, and the YouTube channel is at John Levy Channel on YouTube. Where is it weekly, John, that you explore these mysteries?
Yep, every week, about a 20-minute episode.
And over or approaching 300,000 subscribers. And what are we looking at? An archive of about, 300, 400 videos?
Yeah, about 300 videos now.
There's that much material out there that can justify 300 plus videos.
It's overwhelming, actually. There's no end to... I'm learning every day. Every day, and history is really fascinating when you begin going down this rabbit hole, because most of these architectural wonders nobody's ever seen before.
When we're talking about some of the these beautiful buildings, let's say, for example, the Chicago World's Fair, wasn't someone keeping a diary when these structures were going up? Don't we have kind of a step-by-step journal or diary? That's, you're holding up the book there, David. What is it?
Holding up the book. This is for the 1851 Philadelphia exhibition. But yes, the meticulous diary, and these things, this is one of the creepiest books that I've ever read. This is the 1851 Philadelphia one. There is one for the Chicago one and all the others. I don't know. You won't be able to see. I know people listening can't see it, but it's like the densest text I've ever seen. And it reads like an instruction manual, because they capture absolutely everything, every exhibit. I'm trying to find something with all the technology that was on display. I know it's hard for you to see it, but it's all meticulously diagrammed in here. Everything from the steam engine to baby incubators to how to grow corn to what a school desk should look like. You name it. And it's I'm trying to stay away from concluding anything, but if I stumbled on an ancient Inca city that no one had ever heard of, that political forces were going to tear down, and I had 3 years, what would I do? I would make a book like this, and I would document the heck out of it. So someone is documenting the heck out of all of these world fairs, and the legacy of them is not the... How long are they usually up, John? 3 months, 6 months, something like that? It's like a ridiculous...
Yeah, I mean, period. You figure you have winter, you know, so you don't even have a good full year.
Yeah, they're up for a very short period of time, but the amount of technology documentation that comes out of them is staggering.
So are there any buildings from the Chicago World's Fair remaining, or were they all leveled?
Yes, and there are, and that's what's really interesting, is that kind of takes away from the idea that these buildings were built as temporary buildings. They are just as beautiful and permanent as anything we'd see in the nation's capital. That the same columns that seem to be made of one piece of polished marble. So there is a lot that remains, and St. Louis had a similar World's Fair, and there's a lot for us to look at. There's still a lot of examples of this architectural style, and when you read the history for not just the World's Fair, but all of these buildings in history, what you get is a good explanation to who the architect was and maybe where the funding came from. And that's pretty much it. You don't get the details of where were the bricks coming? How were they shipped? There are so many questions that need answered that aren't there, that just don't exist. These stories are paper thin in the end.
Right. And again, if you ran the algorithm, the using the artificial intelligence, it just wouldn't add up. It doesn't add up, feasible.
Well, it doesn't. And we have lots of information to feed the thing. In fact, we got the balance sheets for every World's Fair from 1793 to 1971. And we're feeding that into this thing. And what you discover is, you know, we're told it was a viable business model. Well, it's not. The first 100 years, these things lost tons of money. So, and you know, going back to the San Francisco one, or even the Chicago one, they're surrounded by fires. So typically, either before or after or both, there'll be a fire. And so, and I just, because San Francisco's in my head, you know, that had several fires. These cities, we're told, including the World's Fairs, were rebuilt 4, 5, 6 times over the course of 50 years, 80 years. It doesn't make any sense. And as a person who has done construction, every building that has ever existed, including the Great Pyramid of Giza, is a temporary building. It's going to be gone. It's going to be gone at some point. So it's just, it's a silly thing to have to argue against. The other thing that John and I talk about is just the foundation work. Let's say you're building a 1 million square foot temporary building. Well, it still can't fall down and kill anybody during the fair. So the foundation takes years to put in. And they were told the entire 1 million square foot thing, including the foundation, was done in 2.5 years. It's impossible. And what we're doing, and we're really going for it, because we're just going to blow the whole thing up, and we're going to show that it's impossible. What that means, I don't know. I don't know what it means. You know, we're going to need other people to read this and comment. We're going to have ideas, but I don't know what it means. Our history is fake. In North America, our history is completely fake, and we're proving it, and we'll have it proven. And
that all these buildings were already here. I mean, if it's if it's logistically impossible to do that in that time period, then the building was already there. And then when we look at old photographs, the oldest in every photograph that's part of this research is looking at every story, every photograph, every angle, and the roads themselves are they're mud roads. I mean, they don't even have roads. So even if you could get a pallet of bricks with a team of horses on a wagon, you don't have the road to even support that weight. So before you even build anything, you need to have a grader and heavy equipment come out and lay everything out. And what we see is from day one, Washington, D.C., I'm sure a lot of people are familiar with the crazy complex grid. Well, that comes first. It's not like the buildings, and then you put in the first thing you do is survey everything and grade the roads with heavy machinery. I don't think any of that's possible without lasers and modern machinery and heavy equipment.
So there's the rub. These buildings were there before the formation of the United States.
And what we see in the pictures is it's all presented backwards. So instead of seeing the foundation and then the crappy buildings and the okay buildings and the nice buildings, instead we see these glorious European buildings. And the construction photos, when there are any, the buildings seem to be built from the top down very consistently. In almost all of them, all of the ornate stuff that you would do, the finishing work that you would put on the top, shows up before, you know, the foundation is poured, or and there's no roads. You know, it's just it's baffling. It's just completely out of, it's wonky. What we're trying to do is defrag it.
Amazing. So, any what's the ETA on the publication of evidence of the old world?
We're shooting for September 15th, and our fingers are crossed.
Amazing. Well, we didn't even get to the and I don't know if this is going to be the subject of the first book or whether this will come later, but this whole legend of the Tartarian empire or civilization and how this all sort of feeds into that. Was it the Tartarian civilization responsible for the star forts and all of these amazing buildings? Go ahead, Joe.
I personally don't think that they're responsible. They're just one little part of the puzzle. The Tartarian thing, I think, has been maybe portrayed as that, maybe misportrayed in that regards. And yet that is just one little part of this research, that we don't see these maps, the hundreds of maps that show a people, a nation of Tartaria or Tartary in that region. And it's very interesting. It rings, when I first discovered it, it seemed to ring a bell. Like, I know that name, but I don't know exactly where from. But no, I think it's unfair to say that they're responsible for everything that we see. It's not, that wouldn't be right, because they're just one little region, and we see this evidence throughout the world.
And I guess, yeah, just to close out, Richard, the other thing when it comes to that, obviously there's lots of maps that show a lot of civilization in what's now, Russia and Northern Asia and stuff. Those same maps show North America populated with cities.
Mm-hmm.
And this is dating back, we're back into the 1500s. And not only do they show cities, they show very European looking cities with defensive walls. And many of the cities also have antenna and odd things on the top of the buildings. And again, these are the first maps ever made of the world. And what's fun is some of these maps, 100 or 150 years before, like San Francisco is discovered on the California coast where San Francisco is, they have the word San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's like, okay, something's up. Matter of fact, like I said, the word San Francisco is on a lot of maps. We're told it was found in 1769 and then named in 1775. But we have maps going back to the 1500s that show San Francisco on the California coast. So it all falls apart. It's just the most gentlest of inquiry. And the namings don't work. The cities don't work. The technology doesn't work. And Tartary, I think, is part of it in that it seems to have suffered the same fate. But we're not ready yet to say that the North American component. Matter of fact, some of the maps say things like these people camped in the fields what was that, John? I sent you in the means of the Tartary, or like the Tartary do, but doesn't mean they're Tartars. And we see those in North America and in Canada, in your neck of the woods. A lot of this went on, so it's very interesting, and we're gonna expose it all.
Can of worms. Evidence of the old world, hopefully coming September the 15th. Amazon,
we're going wide with this one. So if you can buy a book, this thing will be in there.
David Edward and John Levy, check out his YouTube channel at John Levy Channel. Gentlemen, thank you so much.
Thank you, Richard.
Thank you for having us, Richard. Always a pleasure.
A new Richard Serrett's Strange Planet drops every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Subscribe at StrangePlanetPodcast.com.